You're in a good place now. Relax, breathe, smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, the home of intelligence and entertainment, where relevant topics are discussed and where what you think counts, and where superior is the norm. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess, live on 660 The Answer.
You know what I'm craving? A little perspective. That's it. I'd like some fresh, clear, well-seasoned perspective. Can you suggest a good wine to go with that?
With, what, sir?
Perspective. Fresh out, I take it. Very well. Since you're all out of perspective and no one else seems to have it in this bloody town, I'll make you a deal. You provide the food, I'll provide the perspective. Which would go nicely.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. On tonight's Perspectives, we're exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning, what we learn throughout our lifetime, and how our learning tends to actually move full circle. You know, I think it's interesting how the things that we learn when we're young seem to kind of come back around, and we're going to talk about that later, but I think we should begin tonight's conversation by discussing the different levels and dimensions of learning. Hey, Billy, how you doing?
Doing fine. About yourself?
I'm doing good.
Great.
You having a good night?
I'm having a really good night.
Beautiful Saturday night here.
It is.
In Big D.
In Big D, Dallas, Texas. You betcha.
And surrounding areas. In counties. In Tarrant County.
The Metroplex.
The Metroplex.
Yes.
It's awesome. Joining us tonight, Nedra James. Nedra, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Ashley, how are you?
I'm doing excellent.
Good,
and
good.
I asked you to be here because I know Nedra is actually a friend of mine, but also she's been a teacher for, 29 years at Booker T. Washington.
Yes, wow. A retired teacher now, I'm proud to say.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
It was a lot of time, but it was a lot of good time.
Good.
29 years in one place, seeing many, many different kids, different students, different visitors. And it was very fulfilling. Could not have wanted to be in a better place.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Also joining us tonight, Deborah Washington. Deborah, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing well.
Deborah, I invited also to be here. She's a friend and an educator. She's been in education for a long time. And you loved it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Still love it.
See, and I think at different ages, I think we learn different things. I think in the beginning, like, we know certain things that we aren't taught. I think they're inherent. And I think let's start there. Let's start about these years. I call them the pre-talk years, the years before you can talk, because you don't have the ability to talk. And people have a tendency of looking at babies all the time as, oh, look at the cute little baby. Oh, look how cute. But I think actually children, even though they can't talk, I think they can totally understand.
They are understanding, not can. I know it happens. They feel, they sense, and they give you the purest answer or the purest communication that you could ever want. It is the most, I think, open time for learning to occur.
I think so, too. I mean, what do you think, Deborah?
Well, I think babies are amusing. I do think they do sense certain things, and especially considering that not all babies are adorable. Some come with personalities that they've inherited from grandparents, parents, or whatever. So they sense what you feel about them, the baby talk, what's around them, the environment. So there's a lot of things that happen before the baby makes that first word. I mean, education begins in the womb.
Well, ladies, I mean, you know, there's a lot of scientific study about nonverbal communication. Okay. And I think you're born with the ability to nonverbally communicate.
Absolutely.
And then you just kind of add on to that as you grow older, right?
Correct. The giggles that a baby has, the giggles, the crying, the tears, the stretching of the arms and the legs, and then in that moment where they might sense some sort of fear, the swaddling. Why does holding a baby one way as another way work better for the child? And I think a lot of times people take those things for granted, but they are hearing and feeling what you're feeling as the adult, whether it is your heartbeat racing, or whether it's your heartbeat at a calm, steady rhythm. And I think that's very important. And they're communicating those things.
I was reading Psychology Today, actually, earlier tonight. And they were talking about how, you know, babies have the, you know, facial expressions like y'all were talking about, how there's gestures, sounds. And I do agree with you. I think that, and they actually state this in many, many journals. I mean, so it's, they've done testing, they've done studies, they've spent millions and probably billions of dollars to test this.
Johnson & Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And so when a baby's held by a parent, you know, that the parent's in, I think the parent's feeling good, happy, it can feel that feeling. Just in the essence and the opposite. If somebody's, you know, upset or angry, and I think that the things that babies understand is wild, but they just can't put it into words, and so they can't explain it. And that's the tough thing, because I think we're closest to maybe what the righteous reality is when we're young.
Right. Well, I've even read something that Ashley that said that even in the womb, you know, the baby will hear the mother's voice.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And, oh, we're going pre-talk. You know, we're going into womb talk.
That's right.
Exactly. Your mama's voice, daddy's voice. Yeah. That's right. And the music. And they always tell you, play music that you want the baby to respond to while you're carrying a child.
Play languages. I mean, different languages.
I've heard that too.
Yes. Yeah.
Different languages, different sounds. And we're leaving out smell. Mm-hmm. We're talking about sounds, but there's also that direct connection with smell.
Smell is a big deal.
Smell is a very big deal.
I have smells that I smell that remind me of relatives, that remind me of past times.
Camé soap.
Camé soap. In the house.
But Camé soap back in the day was a floral smell like none other. Floral, but clean. And it's one of my early childhood memories from my aunt's home in
that's cool.
California.
And it registers. I mean, like sometimes I think of like popcorn smell. Like I have it coming like into my head. And that's always kind of odd. We won't go into that oddity because I'll call my grandmother up and she'll be making popcorn. And she only lives 9 hours away by car. So I know I couldn't smell it in the house. I don't know what type of a psychic connection that
it
is.
Was
I'm psychically
her.
Connected to snack foods and processed popcorn. I also have that addiction. The movie Butter Popcorn as well, so maybe it's just always with me. You know?
Well, you're weird, Ashley, but that's what makes you special, though.
Yeah. And as those babies really do, those things make a difference. And children who are not given those kinds of things as they mature, even other studies have shown there's a difference between filling a child's palate with sounds, with tastes, with touch, with smells, with the senses, as opposed to not. Makes a different footprint for the child.
Well, Nedra, and wouldn't you agree that if a child, especially in the infant to the toddler stage, if they don't get that input, whatever it is that, you know, that we're talking about,
like socialization,
that can lead to that. It can. It's not 100% guaranteed, but
communication deficiencies.
Yeah, which can lead to development problems.
Absolutely, I absolutely.
I think pets too. I think pets are important, and I know a lot of people don't. There's a lot of people out there that don't agree with me, and I have family that also doesn't agree with me. But I think having a really great dog or a cat, you know, with a child is awesome.
Well, it's protection. It's a playmate, and there's nothing that can harm the child once you find out what affects the child as far as health issues. But the pets are a good thing, and they help the child as it grows older take ownership in caring and in caring for and loving.
Well,
actually,
I agree with
they
that.
Create their early relationships.
Well, I love animals, and when I was young, I had a dog, and that dog was my friend. I mean, I didn't have any brothers and sisters growing up, and so that was my best friend, and my best friend's name was Snuggles. Snuggles is
before
so cute.
Before the detergent.
It was at the detergent time. I remember my friends used to always use Snuggles detergent.
Oh.
That's where I got the name.
You're dating yourself here, actually. You know that.
It was early 80s. I mean, you know, early 80s, here we go, and I remember Snuggles, and my friend, actually, it was a friend of mine from from brownies. And I remember one time we got in an argument. She used to pick her nose and eat her boogers. But anyway, besides the fact, I actually pulled her like behind the door one time I punched her in the arm and I said, stop doing that. And I said, I'm not going to talk behind your back, but you know, other people are talking about you. So I just want to let you need to stop picking your nose. But anyway, her mom used to use Snuggles detergent. And I remember that's how I named my dog Snuggles. And that was a little, obviously a diversion off topic right there, but I think
it was information.
It was good information.
I think it's wonderful because our first nanny, which is funny because our cousin said, well, who kept you when you were little? And I thought, well, I don't remember. So the first nanny was actually a collie, which was the dog.
That was my
your nanny.
Gretel, the German Shepherd, was our first nanny.
Ours was Barney.
See, when Barney, my first dog was named Barney. Taffy. And Taffy had to leave the house because Taffy was so connected to me that when I got in trouble on the very few occasions that I got in trouble.
Oh, sure.
Taffy had to be removed from my presence so that whatever dispensation had to come my way, Taffy wouldn't get in the way.
Taffy would bite.
Yeah, Taffy would. Taffy didn't like that.
Well, I mean, my parents used to say, don't get in trouble because you'll upset the dog.
And it was true.
Well, we have more to talk about on that because I think that's some interesting stuff. When we come back, we're going to be talking about those years 2 to 5, and we're going to continue on our discussion about exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning and what we learn throughout the lifetime and how our learning tends to somewhat move full circle. So stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, Ashley Burgess, will be back in, we'll be back in 2 shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim-up bar. Glass of Perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And if you're just joining us this evening, we've been talking and exploring about the different levels and dimensions of learning, what we learn throughout our lifetime, and how our learning actually tends to move full circle. You know, earlier we were actually discussing the idea of the pre-talk years, and I thought it was interesting. Nedra and Deborah and Bill came up with some really good concepts on that, and how, you know, the pre-talk years, how those are the times that we are very connected with emotions, with expressions, with gestures, with feelings. We learn a lot from our parents. I think a lot of people don't consider the fact that even though a child can't talk doesn't mean that they can't understand. And even Psychology Today and everybody else has done millions and millions of dollars worth of research to prove the fact that a child actually understands what's happening and actually can figure out, you know, the mood of the situation as well as understand talk and understand language. And that's why they're able to speak, you know, so quickly when they get older. So let's talk about the next years. And I think that's interesting, like the 2 to 5. I think 2 to 5 is interesting because you're able to talk, you're able to walk, and this is some interesting times because, you know, this is interesting. You're fancy free and foot loose. I mean, you know, you can go places, you can go swing on the swings, you know, you don't need to be connected to mom's hip all the time. This is a big deal.
Well, you know, the terrible 2 and terrible 3s, you know, I think it's the time where you start to push the boundaries and kind of see what you can get away with.
Oh, and they're out there testing.
Yes.
But at the same time, they are creating their own footprint. A 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, best time to teach them to swim, best time because they have no fear. Those things haven't arrived yet. And languages, if many, many studies, and I had a personal set of friends who wanted me to learn Spanish at a very early age. The earlier, the easier.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
I tried learning Spanish at a later age, and I did, but I mean, to this day, I mean,
Como estás?
Usted.
Señorita Burgess.
No. The most important phrase, ¿Dónde está el baño? You need to know how to say that in any language.
My friend actually just put his kid in a Spanish camp, and he's 3 years old. That's the right, not my friend, but the child is 3 years old. I mean, my friend might act like he's 3. but he put his kid in this camp, and he was like, yeah, well, you know, it's an all-day camp, and it's 2 days a week, and it's all day, and it was cheap. And that's good. And so for 4 days out of 2 weeks, the kid gets to go to this camp. And I said, so why did you do that? And he goes, a whole day without the kid. And I said, you know what? He's going to be speaking Spanish before you know it, like making up all kinds of talk for poo-poo and all kinds of things. And apparently he goes around talking about poo-poo all the time.
And does dad know Spanish?
Oh, no. Muy poquito okay. Español.
So son, child may know more Spanish That's now what I than
said.
Dad.
I said he'll be saying all kinds of things about Poppy.
I was going to say, you can get away with calling Poppy names.
It's another language.
Names we don't use on this station.
That's right.
That age is also a great time for exploration, because when a child between the two and what are we doing? Two and five, they're exploring, they're assessing, they're developing their own perimeters, their own boundaries. They're assessing who you are and what you mean to them, what they can, cannot get away with. You would be surprised at what they are able to do without communicating with a whole lot of words and a whole lot of life experiences or skills.
Well, that's Deborah, don't you think that's why toddlers and sometimes will like throw fits?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, at the Target?
Frustration.
Absolutely.
At the grocery store?
Well, they're angry. Not anywhere.
Necessarily out of frustration. It's just that either they've viewed it before, they know this works, so this is the button I push and it works.
And it gets
that's
this result.
Assessing.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's like that Pavlov's response, okay? Mm-hmm. I jump on the ground and I scream and yell, and guess
what?
And
this is what happens.
Mom's going to
get
do
ice
this.
Cream.
And right. See, in my past, that wouldn't have happened. I knew exactly what they did, so I didn't ever do that.
To the rear.
It depends if mom is old school or new school,
that's
or
right.
If it's grandma or mom, because if you, you know, that action difference. Could warrant two different responses depending upon the mothering.
Mm-hmm. Grandma that's could true. Say, let's go get ice cream, and in your situation, they would take the dog out of the room, and
coming
here comes the
rear. It was coming to the
it
rear.
Was
and we knew this. And right. We knew this. But that's exactly right.
You know, my favorite comedian, Ashley, is Bill Cosby.
Oh, yeah.
You ever see the...
You're just trying to win points in this group.
Jello
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, you know, Bill Cosby's the man.
I mean, I'm a Chris Rock fan. I'm
okay,
a Chris Rock
too.
Fan.
Me
I like
too.
Chris But I like
me
Bill
too.
Cosby. I
but
like Bill
anyway,
Cosby.
Remember, I don't know if you ever saw the comedy... show that he did way back in 1980. It's what his
the one with
sitcom.
The dentist where he's like, oh, yeah. The dentist, okay. He's trying to talk in his mouth.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, he did a little bit of a bit in there. I think what kind of what Deborah's talking about. So here his 16 month old child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can't have the cookie.
Cannot.
Puts it way up high.
Way up.
As soon as he leaves the room, the 16 month old child builds a ladder
to get up
to the cookie. He comes back in, you know, what are you doing? I was getting a cookie for you. You know, yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But what happened?
16-month-old child knows how to,
that
you
hits
know,
home, doesn't
get
it, Bill?
Cookie.
It hits home, doesn't it, Bill?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You did that. You did that.
Where do you think he got that from?
Okay. I know, right? That's Bill up there. Bill, he does that every day here in the studio.
A 2 to 5-year-old is building for a purpose, but look at what that parent probably didn't know. That child could do that. But when that child wanted something, there he does
out.
What he had to do. Yeah.
Building and assessing. Mm-hmm. For example, use the wrong word. You can have a whole plethora of words that you're using. The one cuss word.
Mm-hmm.
They remember.
Oh, I used to repeat that stuff all the time. I wouldn't even mean to. Like, I would just be repeating whatever my mom said.
You heard it.
And she would laugh because she realized I was
well, is your mom listening tonight?
I've been told that my first word was a cuss word.
There we go.
Cause,
was it?
Because my dad, you know, he's got a foul mouth.
Your first word was
a cuss word? Not da-da, mama.
No. It was because my dad was in the service, you know, and so, I mean, and, you know, to him, every other word, you know, I mean, it's just normal to him.
Your first word was, see, my first word was actually, my grandfather swears my first word was a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandfather taught me the sun is shining. And that was the first thing that they claim I said. No cuss words that were added, but I guess if I was around military folk and they cussed a lot, maybe so. But that's,
well, my cuss words came later, but I did.
They were just
so colorful. And I loved
an expression.
Yes, an expression.
Did you ever have a blankie?
I didn't have a blankie. I was a tomboy.
I had a doll. I remember this doll. I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but yes, I had a doll that was my comfort zone.
Were you the only child or?
No. I have 2 brothers, 2 sisters, very different. Each child was probably raised a little bit different.
Now, where were you in the sequence?
I'm the middle child.
Okay.
You know, I'm the caregiver.
Gotcha.
You turned out pretty good.
Didn't she?
My friends who know me well, and there's that little quirky side.
The angel and devil side.
The angel and truly that.
The devil.
But the doll's name was Bippa.
Bippa.
I know. And I remember we had to take this doll to the doll hospital.
Really? Like to get fixed?
To get fixed.
To get mended.
Otherwise, you would have thrown the fit of all fits.
Hippos are hurt.
I was the doctor in the neighborhood because I got the Ben Casey set and all that stuff. Okay. So I converted the attic into a triage.
Okay.
And
she's got the little white hat on there.
I got
the
production design.
Production design.
She can buy that on.
Yeah, production design. Absolutely. Oh,
well,
wow.
I didn't have anything like that triage or anything. I just had a dog. Well, that was too early. I didn't have my dog until I was like, what, 5 or 6. But I don't know. I had that blankie. And I was a tomboy a little too. But I remember that blankie. And I remember showing up. And I think it's right after what we're talking about. So I was still 5, but it was my first year in elementary school.
Okay.
And I remember showing up with the blanket and I was holding it in the car and I get out of the car and I'm carrying it and my mom looks at me and she goes, "Hey, Ashley." And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Do you think it's a good idea to go to school with that blankie?" And I was like, and I looked down at my blankie and he's got holes all in it and everything. And it was like pink and green and yellow and like kind of like blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, And I remember I was like, "No, it's fine. I'll just keep it." And she's like, "They're going to make fun of you. The kids are going to make fun of you." And I was like, "Oh." So I walked back and I put it back in the car and I like secretly cried.
Oh,
that was so sad.
You know, I can relate. In my tomboy years, you know, I had, you know, not a blankie, but a teddy bear.
Teddy bear. Yeah. Okay.
In my tomboy years.
Did you hide it?
Did I what?
Did you hide the teddy bear?
You kept it with you?
No, I did not.
You took it to school with you.
I think my mother didn't allow me to do it.
Okay.
Yeah, so you'll lose it.
Okay.
You know, she made up something. You'll lose it. Which you knew you never lose it. It was just the fact that.
By the way,
that
joke went way over your head, I think.
What? What joke?
Me and my tomboy years.
I got it.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, Nedra
got it.
I got it. But it went right over your head.
I got it. I gave the blank, you the eye, didn't
the
I?
The blank look on your face is like, okay, what's the story here? You were waiting for me to.
That's too funny. Yeah. I didn't have anything that I took. It was so ordered.
Doggone it, Bill.
I got you. And I thought, okay, well, maybe she didn't. Okay.
I'm a born again woman.
You know, okay. But there we go. I was in the trees, falling out of the trees. But one thing that talking about this makes me remember, I was 4 years old. Family members took medicine and I watched that. And on a vacation in San Francisco one year, I went into the medicine cabinet and promptly emptied everything. And then I ended up in the hospital. So people do actions inform.
We're going to talk about that. Yeah, don't forget that. When we come back from break, we're talking about that you can actually follow the leader and you can get hurt.
Yes.
So stay tuned because we're going to be exploring more about the different levels and dimensions of learning, about learning throughout our lifetime, as well as how it kind of moves full circle. So stay tuned because Perspectives with your host, Ashley Burgess, will be back in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey. And you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess on 660 The Answer.
Do you see the light? A man! Do you see the light?
What light?
Have you seen the light?
Yes! Yes! Jesus H. Christ! I have seen the light!
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And if you're just tuning in tonight, we've been discussing and exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning and what we've learned throughout our lifetime. And did you know that how we learn tend to actually move full circle? It seems that the things that were important and the things we inherently knew about when we were younger, we tend to want to learn about when we get older. And we'll talk about that later. But right now, we've been talking about the different levels and dimensions of learning. And earlier, we talked about the pre-talk years. We've been talking about the years of 2 and 5. Before we exit this time frame, let's talk about, Nedra, right before break, you were talking about how you watched some adults take some medicine. And so you watched them take medicine. You didn't know what it was, but you saw them take some pills or some liquid or what have you. Then what happened? You said you were like taking everything out of the medicine cabinet?
Well, they did it on a regular basis. And I, in my mind, I was the only one that didn't get to go to this cabinet. When my grandmother, her sister and brother-in-law, And so one day I just decided that I needed to know about that cabinet. And I really remember walking into the bathroom, taking a chair. So as you were speaking, Bill, about going up and make, you know, yeah, Cosby talking ladder, about that
yeah.
building.
Yeah.
I got a chair from the kitchen, which was across the hall from the bathroom, and pulled it in, climbed up, proceeded to open everything that I could open. Put it in my mouth because the water cups were there by the sink. And I just remember this. And of course, obviously later I got very ill and they had to pump my stomach.
Yeah, I'll bet.
But it was a routine. And I watched that same way, better ending of a story, the dancing. My aunt Maggie loved Marvin Gaye, and those were the early years. Pride and Joy, excuse me for that popping. But they would dance after dinner. Now, what I didn't really realize
this is like the Motown days.
The Motown days.
Okay,
I got you. So you put the record on. You know the deal.
This is good.
You're too young, but I remember. And they would dance, clear the dinner table. Somebody was doing the dishes, but the part of the family was in there dancing. Now, that was a good thing because it was healthy. You didn't go sit down in a chair and go to sleep. But between the medicine and the dancing, there were routines. So I was observing. I was the only child, probably among 7 or 8 adults. So I just paid attention.
That's awesome.
They were like doing. A sponge. You mm-hmm. just absorbed.
And I pulled up everything. I didn't pick up dominoes. I even went down to the car that was kept in the basement and tried to turn it on and started with some keys that weren't the correct keys.
Oh, she
God.
Was never into trouble at
yeah,
all.
No,
I can't see how she would ever be into trouble
at all. Not at all, but I was informed.
Another Bill Cosby joke. If you have one child, you know who did it.
You know who did it. I could never blame it on anybody.
So, were you the only child?
I was the only child.
Oh, my
goodness.
I was
the only child. And my grandmother... Her sister-in-law, I'm sorry, and her brother were very close, and they didn't have any children either. So I was their only child, a la grandchild, too.
You got a lot of attention.
I got a lot of adult attention. Yes, yeah. Indeed.
And so you were really socialized around a lot of adults. And that's mm-hmm. like me, too. I would always, my mom would have her friends over or what have you, and, you know, gay, straight, what have mm-hmm. you. My mom was in music, and so it was what it is what it is. And that was kind of before the times now. I mean, it's a little different, but I remember they'd be like, hey, dance and sing for us. Mm-hmm. Ashley, entertain us, mm-hmm. or, you know, and I'd go and I did, you know, do like a little waltz or whatever, mm-hmm. and I was all like a smiley face, and I'd walk out there and entertain some more. And then,
absolutely.
And then my mom would be like, okay, it's time to go to bed.
Because dinner, post-dinner, was the time for some sort of recreation,
mm-hmm.
whether it was talking, washing the dishes, clearing the table, putting the music on. My uncle would go outside and sit on the front and have his cigar post dinner. I never tried to smoke his cigar, I might add. I wasn't that
okay.
Informed.
Good one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Just to let you know.
But, you know, Ashley, the theme I'm picking up here from Nedra, and I think it applies to children of that age, is, you know, we said earlier that that's the age to kind of push the boundaries. Well, you know, the other side of that coin is kind of the forbidden fruit mm-hmm. thing. So if mm-hmm. you tell a child that age, mm-hmm. right, you can't have this or you can't do that. Guess what?
That's exactly
they're
going
to try to
for.
Have it, or they're going to try to
tell
go
a 30-year-old. Tell a 30-year-old you can't date that person. Mm-hmm. You can't see that. You know they're going to do it too.
No,
I mean,
absolutely.
I think it's all about what boundaries we're going to break, and
it's
that's
coming
like
in. It's coming in another way. The messaging is coming in.
But you're
way.
Right about that. Mm-hmm. You learn. You learn good. You learn bad. You learn all the stuff in between. And I think it's like a bounty roll. It's like, that's what you're saying. It's like you sponge it up, you know? And I think a lot of times people don't realize though, the adults don't always realize, okay, what I'm dishing out is going directly into the subconscious of this child.
Absolutely.
And so for everybody listening tonight, you know, the things you say around a child, I mean,
matter.
You know, oh, they do matter.
They matter.
We were just talking about that off air when
yeah.
Bill was talking about it. One of his first words was a cuss word.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that I know their first word was a cuss word. And mm-hmm. so when you're sitting there saying all this stuff, you got to realize that before the age of three, do you know that kids actually, when they see the TV, they think whatever on the TV is actually happening in their own
in real
house
time.
Right
in
there.
That's why it's so dangerous.
They can't see the difference. So if there's like a rape scene or there's some sort of killing scene on TV, they actually compute that as happening inside their own home.
Absolutely.
And that it's normal.
And that it's normal because
they don't know the difference between TV. They don't understand this is a TV box. Like for example, my dog, which is not a child, but my dog actually has tried to jump through the TV a couple of times at its early age because he thinks that, you know, that's the world right there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's and he'll try to jump in, and then when he couldn't jump in, he'd be like, oh, and he'd run toward the other side of the house thinking, oh, that's the direction that, you know, the cow went, or that's the direction the bird went. You know, and it was funny because I realized kids are a lot the same before they're fundamentally at that age that they realize.
Absolutely.
In fact, I know some adults who can't tell the difference between reality and, you know, hello? So why would we expect a child
to do it? Yeah. And they, at that point, which is not only what they see, but what they hear and what you say to them. Oh, he's a bad boy. Oh, he's being ugly. Oh, he's or she's doing this or that. At those points, you are setting a label for a child that they may not ever change.
Parenting, sometimes there are a lot of little quips, little things that parents will say to sum up a whole experience. Probably it's intergenerational. If you say, I brought you into this world, I'll take you out.
Another Bill Cosby joke. You know, I'll take this. You out, and I'll make another one look just like you.
Exactly. Exactly.
My mother still uses that on me.
Okay, just in case.
But think about that. And so that's it. So those little quips. So you have these little cliff notes for parenting. But with children, I honestly believe you have to have some flexibility, and that means that the adult sometimes is not right.
Right. And that how do you check themselves?
They do. Yeah. But you being the adult, how do you do that?
Mm.
How do you save face? And a lot of parents won't admit when the child just might know a little bit more. Try to get a new high tech device. What do you say? Give it to the kid.
Right.
I think that's actually pretty cool because I think if you are, if you're at that level where you don't worry, that's when you tell the kid, you know what? I was wrong. You were right. Because, you know, everybody that's a parent nowadays, you have to remember you're not that much older than your kids.
And
okay?
It's on
you're
the
a kid
job
too.
It's on the job training.
Exactly.
Yes,
and I would respect it. It's like going to a doctor. And I think this is key is that for every parent listening that's, you know, wonders what you should do, when you go to a doctor and the doctor tells you, well, I think you should do this, or and they make up something instead of saying, you know what, I really don't know what the answer is. You respect that person so much more when they're honest with you. I mean, how many times have you talked about somebody and somebody asks you, how do you think about this? Or what do you think about Deborah? What do you think? And you go, you know, I love them because they're honest and they're true. And I think as a parent, you have to be able to step up to the plate and say, hey, I don't know every answer.
I don't know,
but we'll find out together. Or, you know, you have something there.
Let's bring in that village. There's a reason why, whether it's a village, a community, the next door, the community center or what, it takes more than one person, two parents to really raise a healthy child that you expect to put out into the world, to do something, to make a change, to make some type of an impact in a healthy way. And we are so comfortable giving children today things which thwarts imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we should be able to say, and I agree, and particularly in education, in health, places where research has to be done, and it's not all the same, and it's not all a clinical moment that reproduces itself exactly the same. Say, I don't know, and then go find out. Go somewhere, research.
Or like my mother used to say, go look it up in the dictionary.
Go look it up
in the encyclopedia.
Our kids now don't know what the dictionary is.
Right.
We're going to talk more about that here when we come back from our break. But, you know, we're exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning, what you can learn throughout your lifetime. And, you know, the learning that tends to actually move full circle. So stay tuned because we'll all be back in Perspectives with your host, Ashley Burgess. Be back in two shakes.
I can lift you up. I can show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be.
Get in here. Give us your perspective. We're listening. And you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's Perspectives, we've been exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning and what we've learned throughout our lifetime and how our learning actually tends to move full circle. You know, earlier we were talking about, you know, the pre-talk years, about those years when you're a child before you can talk, but how you can really understand things, understand emotions, understand, you know, just basically sounds and conditioning, as well as being able to understand what's going on around you. We started talking about 2 to 5 years and how, you know, you get the language, you're able to walk, you're able to talk, and how you're actually able to kind of become your own self, have your own personality, your own character. So let's go into kindergarten. I mean, I think 2 to 5 is awesome. Let's go to kindergarten. Let's talk about that. I mean, you know, Nedra, Deborah, Bill, we've been talking. I think kindergarten is a rite of passage.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I think that the coloring and staying within the lines, which I totally disagree with, I think that is the worst thing you can teach a kid is to stay with. And why can't I paint blue ground if I want blue ground? Why does it have to be green grass? Why can't it be blue?
Yes.
Why can't it be like a bluish green? Because there is like a bluish green type of grass. What is that called? Like Kentucky blue or something
Kentucky
like that?
Kentucky blue.
Kentucky bluegrass, right? I mean, why can't I have bluegrass? But no. And the lion's got to be this color and the horse has got
to
be brown. But you know, there are white horses.
This way to that way.
And yeah. But you know why? You know why it has to be all those things? Because mm-hmm. the teacher has that big fat pencil.
And she says,
and she will pop right on the knuckles.
What kind of school did you go to?
Well, you know, they can't do that anymore.
I went to an old style
school. Oh, yeah. Old school said that.
The beat down school.
Yeah,
I literally took green eggs and ham for a mantra. Oh, absolutely. I made green eggs and ham.
Did you like them, Sam I am?
Absolutely.
And a boat?
And a boat.
Did you like it with a fox?
With the fox.
Did you like it in a box?
In a box. Absolutely.
Did you like it in the rain? Did you like it on the train?
I love that book. Okay, we're going to do a whole show about that book.
Absolutely.
That would be a great show.
I'll start it out with the reading.
Nedra will read.
Real quick, a very quick story, Ashley. In my previous life as an insurance agent.
He means his previous lifetime.
Was that farmers?
No.
Same life.
I won't even mention the name because they're a horrible company. But anyway, I was an agent trainer. And after I was an agent for several years, we actually read Green Eggs and Ham in the training class as a teaching tool on how to overcome objections to sale.
I bet you did.
Anyway, okay, absolutely. Go ahead. Ashley.
That is an interesting takeoff on that one. That's very interesting. I like Green Eggs. We should do a show on that because I think it clarifies a lot of things about life. Is that if you think about it, we're all given this bill of goods about how you have to do things a certain way. And, you know, you really don't. And I think sometimes when you're outside of the box or you're in the box eating the ham or whatever you're doing, it seems to work. So let's go back to those kindergarten years. I think that that does change. I think that when you're younger, you see outside of that box. But then, you know, I understand that they want society. They want to have us have some regulations, you know,
but that's where the Montessori training is such a right way to allow children to grow.
I went to a Montessori school.
Yeah. There is nothing wrong with wanting bluegrass.
I don't think so either.
Because when you go outside of whatever building you're in, you're going to see green grass or brown if it's burnt or what have you.
Yeah, 100 degree weather.
Yeah, 100
Texas.
Degree weather in Texas. You're
I have a solution
see.
For 100 degree weather burnt grass in Texas.
What's
We're
the
listening.
Solution?
Floral spray paint.
You and I just thought the same thing. Is the grass greener on the other side, Ashley?
It could be.
Actually,
well, we actually did a show called "The Grass Is Greener" and about how you know the concept about the one problem with most relationships is they always think that the grass is greener. So I spray painted green spray paint on concrete, and I said, you know, it could be green grass. The next door could be green grass. It could be fake AstroTurf, or it could just be spray. You know,
and we
green
did this
spray
in a public
concrete.
Park, probably illegally.
Public property.
To make the point.
Because it's true. It could be spray painted concrete.
It's a matter of lighting.
It's so funny. Deborah said that, and you and I looked right at each other, had the same look
same
in our
thought.
Faces.
We're like, oh my God.
But again, production design. She can solve those things. And kids ought to be able to see things differently.
You know, Nedra, because here's the thing. You know, children have to be encouraged to be creative.
Yes,
I've got a cousin who, when he was in elementary school, I forget what grade it was in. Anyway, he, to this day, he's 35 years old. He loves Legos. Okay. And I'm talking about the old style Legos too. Yeah. I mean, nowadays they come in and you can only build the helicopter or whatever. Now, mm-hmm. used to they sell you like this big mm-hmm. box of things and it's up to you.
And it was something. Up to you.
And so they were given some sort of school project to build something and he wanted to do it in Legos. His teacher would not let him do it because it was not original.
And it was wrong.
Wrong.
It was wrong.
I mean, and he's still mad about that to this day, actually.
And you see how it followed him through his yeah. life. Mm-hmm. I had a teacher, and now we're a little ahead of the years that we're talking about, and I'm not going to forget that.
No, it could be the kindergarten teacher.
It could be in kindergarten as well. But I had a teacher in the ninth grade who told me that I could not draw a circle if I had a can and a pencil.
Ooh, that's mean.
And I thought, wow. And it followed me.
Just so you like were mad about it.
Well, I just thought, well, did you give me the can and the pencil
no.
to draw the circle? No, you didn't.
What if it was a sardine can?
You know? So it was something that stuck with me.
You got a square.
And that was a negative story, right? Right, yeah. right. Well, that was a negative story.
But I think that illustrates, though. I mean, if you try to put the brakes on a child's creativity,
exactly.
that's going to have an effect as well, don't you think?
Exactly. So well, why not so. Effective in the positive? Why not do what my kindergarten teacher did and teach me something that I had still know? And that it's a poem. I'm not going to do the whole thing, but the first
souls.
Part, I know y'all are so happy. But I was the child. It was called I Am the Child. And it was a positive support. You can do, you can be, you can go wherever you want to go. And I learned it when I was in kindergarten.
Right.
Well, there's some great teachers.
That's yes. part of the rote learning that yeah. a lot of educators wanted to get away from rote training, where you wanted to understand and analyze and dissect why you learn what you learn. But there's room for both.
For both sides.
There are some
right.
things you just should know automatically.
You just should.
If you're out to dinner, you should automatically know how to
calculate
the tip. Food.
Calculate the tip.
It doesn't. Well, that, yeah,
you see
it.
Where I live, how to cut the food properly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I agree with that. I think there's some great teachers out there. But I think also yeah. when we're younger like that, when we're, you know, 5, 6, and 7, you know, and something happens, I think this is where you get those mind-made limitations of this lifetime where, you know, something bad happens on the, you know, on the playground, or somebody
it
hits
stays.
You with the ball and you get hit like in dodgeball, or you don't get picked by the team
right.
or somebody goes and, you know, cold cocks you, you know, and something happens. And I think those are the situations when your mind says, okay, we're not going to let this happen again. We're going to put the defenses up. You know, we got the moats up now. Mm-hmm, we got the alligators. We got the water. Mm-hmm, and we're going to do
start
this.
Building our walls.
And nobody is saying to you how to manage that situation.
Yeah, it's your first exposure
exactly.
to the wider world. I mean,
exactly.
beyond your extended
exactly.
family, beyond the little
the
block that
zone.
You live.
Yeah, because
exactly.
kids can be mean. They're making
Ooh.
Fun of because
oh
of the name.
Yeah.
Like somebody has a name that's
yeah,
not
exactly.
that's made fun of or
how
the way
look.
They look or the way they
how
dress.
They
I mean, I was bullied as a
yeah.
child.
Well, you look like Waldo, right?
Yeah, I look like Waldo when
oh.
I was a kid.
Where
you
is Waldo?
Where is Waldo?
Thick glasses, big ears, buck teeth, you know. And something, you know, my dad.
But I bet you were cute.
Well, I, you know, my parents thought so.
And they were right.
Actually, especially when I was a teenager, I hate my photographs the way when I was a teenager.
Was
so.
It just, it was the glasses though,
it was,
huh?
Well, it was everything. Like really? I said, it was the teeth, it was the ears, mm-hmm. it was everything. So.
And look at the handsome man that you are today.
And look at, you know, the ugly duckling. But anyway, just real quickly, Ashley, it's, you know, something about the socialization. I mean, mm-hmm. I was getting picked on. And my dad, of course, this is old school.
Yeah.
This is not acceptable today. My dad took me out in the backyard and taught me how to fight.
Exactly.
But he made it clear to me, if you ever start a fight, then you
have
to
answer to me.
But,
yeah.
but if you get put in a corner, then you do what you got to do. Now
yeah.
that's not politically correct. But anyway, that was him trying to teach me how to fit into
to
wider
informing
society.
That situation.
And fitting in is a big priority at kindergarten.
Darn age. That
that's your
right.
first outing to the world.
Mm-hmm.
It is fitting in. And that is something that's rough as when we grow up. But we'll talk more about that. You know, we're really exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning. So when we return, we'll be talking about that throughout our lifetime and how a lot of this learning tends to move full circle. If I can get that word out, it tends to move full circle.
It tends to
well,
do that.
Here we go. Perspectives with Ashley Burgess will be back in. Oh, you know what? We'll be back in 2 shakes.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a good place now. Relax, breathe, smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, the home of intelligence and entertainment, where relevant topics are discussed and where what you think counts, and where superior is the norm. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess, live on 660 The Answer.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's Perspectives, we've been exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning, what we learn throughout our lifetime, and how our learning actually tends to move full circle. You know, we've been talking about the different ages, and we learn different things at different times. You know, in the beginning, we know certain things that aren't taught, they're actually inherent. And it's funny how they come with us because we don't have the ability to speak or know how to talk. These things kind of remain silent. And throughout this process, we learn how to perform human functions. We begin to learn the spoken language or two, and we learn how to be human. And it's interesting throughout our younger age when we begin to learn about our environment, our parents, and the people we spend the most time. And it seems that from day one, we pick up on the nuances, the emotions, the feelings, and even the subtle attitudes of the people around us. And, you know, earlier we were talking about, you know, the young ages, you know, the pre-talk ages, but then we got into the two to five, and then we were talking about kindergarten. So let's move up a little bit. Let's talk about elementary school. I remember elementary school as something that was a very, it was a very big teacher. You learned a lot. You actually had to, you know, read, you had to do history, you did math. And, you know, you had different classes you had to go to, but I remember it was just a growing up period of time. And it wasn't until, what, middle school that I kind of started feeling, what do you call it? Not gangly, that's not the word, but just kind of...
Awkward.
You know?
Awkward.
Okay.
Awkward.
The preteen teen years, I mean, yeah, that's the awkward stage.
Now fondly called... Tweens. New word now.
Right.
Tween? Yeah. What's that?
Tween, you are 9 to 11.
9 through 12.
I always thought it was like the 10, 11, 12, yeah. You know, okay. Type stage. Yeah.
But I'm thinking they're including 9 in there.
There's some big nine-year-olds
out here.
Oh, and, remember when you used to say a half?
Oh, right, 9 and a half.
I mean, what adult does a half now?
Nine and three quarters.
Just take off 10 years and take off the half.
Half. Let it go.
So let's talk about those years. Let's talk about that. You know, Nedra James is joining us tonight. Deborah Washington, Billy Boy in the house.
Billy Boy.
Yo.
So let's continue our conversation on this, because I think it's interesting when we go through this period of time, we have to go through all these changes, these learning processes. We learn what's expected of us, I think, more so than anything else. So let's kind of jump around. I like elementary school, but elementary school is kind of more of the same. You're learning how to stay within the confines. You're learning how to color. You're learning how to do what the teacher asks you to do. You show up, you kind of do stuff. But when you start getting into those odd years, it starts becoming kind of an interesting issue.
Well, you're getting more rules and regulations, I think, during that elementary.
And also, too, the older you get, as you get into the tween years, as you're saying, there's mm-hmm. more responsibilities.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Being put on you. Now you're kind of expected to clean your own room.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, you may be walking yourself home from school instead of, you know, mama, you know, coming to pick you
and
up.
And if you're a latchkey kid, you may be fixing that old lunch.
Which I was.
That little after-school snack or something like that if you're not in a program.
And dinner.
If you're not in an after-school program. So it's a lot going on and a lot of things that you have to do. But as from a parental perspective, there are a lot of things that they're learning as well, and that they're seeing the child change.
You know, Ashley, this might be a tangent, okay? But you know, and of course, I don't have any children myself, okay?
Okay.
But
not yet.
Coming. You
know, we're working on it, but
hey.
That's another show.
Yeah.
But,
If
you go, tomboy.
If you listeners only knew what we were talking about during the break. But anyway.
Just call me Snuggles.
She said it. She went there.
Okay, it's
she
open.
She went there.
It's open.
I wonder sometimes if we are in this day and age, we're putting too much structure on children at that exact age when they need to be kind of expanding their horizons. Now, I'm conflicted because on the one hand, I'm like, you know, my goodness, it's like, you know, we plan every single second of kids' days.
Days, yeah.
I think I know why it's structured. I think I know why. It's the same reason why parents put their kids into all-day camps. They want to have their own time.
Yeah.
They've had these children, and now they've had all these years where the kid's there at the house, yeah. And now the kids get to go to school, and they're like, hip, hip, hooray, 9 to 3. And I think the schedule and the regiment is based on the freedom of the
right.
parents.
to make it – but also, too, I mean, from me personally – I hear all these horror stories about, you know, kids getting kidnapped and, you know, sexually abused.
Really?
And, you know, of course, I mean, you know, they lead off the news with that.
And these are the ages.
And no wonder, you know, parents, you know, drive their kids to school and
do everything that they can.
I mean, when I was a kid, you know, my mom said, okay, school's that way.
Yeah.
And you got to be there by such and such time. And also you better be home by such and such time or else.
Well, and the world was a little different place. There was a little more safety. And neighborhoods were neighborhoods.
And I grew up in a small town.
You know? Yes.
But this overattention, do we cripple them for their survival skills?
That's so true.
I'm a bona fide helicopter mom. But that close attention, we cripple them. They don't know how to survive.
Right. That's the question I have for you, actually. Are we regimenting our kids too much? Play dates.
It's management.
Parents are planning play dates mm-hmm. instead of saying, okay, go to the park.
And go
exactly.
play.
And,
exactly.
And get out of my hair for a while.
Yeah, exactly. And go play.
I think
safety had a lot to do with that
yeah.
because we got to a point where parks weren't safe. We got to the point, seemingly, where the village...
They couldn't even get off the school bus.
Couldn't get off the school
bus. Yeah, you know, couldn't even get off the school bus safely.
Without something.
Yeah.
I think there's two sides to this. One, mm-hmm. yes, the news. Anytime you watch a lot of negative news, you're going to think the worst of the worst.
Correct.
I also believe in a concept, and I know that this might seem a little out there, but, for example, I was at a party recently, and they had these VIP gift bags. And in the gift bag, one of the things was this crystal-covered thing of mace, right? It was like a mace container for women, and it was like a hot pink crystal, Swarovski crystal thing. And I remember I looked at it, and a friend of mine was like, oh, you have pink? I want pink. And I said, you know what? You can have mine.
Right.
And she goes, why? And I said, because when you introduce something like that into your life, that means that you're going to the next level, that you're going to need it. Okay.
Right.
My whole theory, it's like getting a gun. Mm-hmm. If you think you need a gun and you're going to carry a gun around, guess what? Something's going to come to you because you've gone to that next level. It's like a video game. You leveled up. Not to the right level, mm-hmm. but you've leveled up
you
to a
forward.
Spot where now you have the ability to defend yourself. So it's going to come your way. And I think we overly freak out by watching the news and seeing all this negative news. But I think to a certain degree, you have to just trust and tell your kid. And if you educate them and say, hey, don't get into a car with somebody. Mm-hmm. You know the only two cars we have.
Exactly.
Also, you know, I want to know who your friends are and where you're going. Mm-hmm. And if you do that and allow them to have some room, mm-hmm. they might be able to do something for themselves. Because I found out that a lot of these boys now supposedly can't do anything for themselves. Like the mom washes all their clothes, does everything, takes them everywhere. And from what I've heard now, like in the early 20s, they have like no initiative. The girlfriends are taking care of everything. They mm-hmm. can't get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that they've allowed themselves to be, you know, mommy too much.
And the skill set
is not being taught.
Life skills. Here's another dimension to it. And I speak, from personal experience too. How many households are single parent households now?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Say I'm the child of divorced parents, mm-hmm. and my mm-hmm. dad was in the service. So after my parents split up, he spent pretty much all my teenage years out of the country.
But okay. That's also the problem with the kidnapping, too, is that a lot of it's happening because of divorced parents, because one of the parents is actually upset about the full custody. And so a lot of these kidnapping situations
are coming in the family.
Yeah.
And see, that goes back to what we said before.
You're
parents
right.
not being truthful. Parents sometimes having it wrong mm-hmm. and not working through those
yeah.
issues.
Yeah. So therefore, you know, kind of to tie that back into Ashley's point, okay, so, you know, there's a problem with boys. Well, heck, they don't have a father figure in the household.
They don't have a father.
To emulate. You know?
Well, some of these
and
do
that
have father
has
figures,
to
but,
be taught.
But that does have to be taught. And it is if it is a village, there are you know, men around that can actually look at these children and say, okay, I will basically adopt that child.
Right.
You know,
it can be a
this.
Caring
so
male.
Needed.
It does not necessarily have to be the father
no.
as long
no.
as it's a good, positive, caring male.
figure.
And it makes a difference.
But also, I mean, it makes a difference also in girls' lives too, doesn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Oh, the
absolutely.
Man figure, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. How
it
she's going to deal with
the
men.
Female how to handle and how to communicate and how to create her skill set with men.
How many girls, you know, grow into women, and because they didn't have that positive male figure in their lives, they put up with
bad stuff. But let's talk about the other. We'll go back into this when we get out from break. But let's talk about the concept of when we come back from break. The ones that did have fathers that weren't good, that mm-hmm. weren't helpful, mm-hmm. because they're the ones that get into these relationships later on, because people always choose people like their parents. And I hate to say that, but most people marry someone like their mom or like their dad, no matter if it was a good or bad emulation. So when we come back, Perspective is going to talk more about that. We're going to talk more about the different levels and dimensions of learning, and also about how learning tends to actually move full circle. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, Ashley Burgess, will be back in, two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim-up bar. Glass of Perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
This is how you see things. This is amazing.
It's a gigantic pain in the ass, but it has its moments.
Wait, this game doesn't happen till October.
Well, it's always October and November and March. So many futures, and they're all real. Just don't know which one will coalesce. Until then, they're all happening. Like this one, it's my favorite moment in human history.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And if you're just tuning in tonight, we've been discussing and exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning and what we've learned throughout our lifetime and how our learning actually tends to move full circle. You know, we've gone through all the ages here. We've gone through kindergarten. We talked about pre-talk, kindergarten, elementary school, you know, middle school. I think we're about middle school, high school right now.
Yeah.
And I think right before the break, you know, we were talking about the father-daughter connection. And, you know, I was actually the life coach for Kaylin on Big Ridge, Texas, right?
That's Ooh. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
I remember that. So I actually helped her actually create a reunion and actually meet her dad again. I mean, they had stopped speaking. They hadn't talked. They had actually stopped communication for over several years, and they actually had to fly her out to California and reunite with her dad because we worked on a lot of stuff that she needed to work on. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because maybe the dad disappears mm-hmm. or marries someone else. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing is that, you know, we learn from our parents, and a lot of times we end up marrying or falling in love with someone that reminds us of the opposite sex. So if it reminds you of your dad, you end up, you know, falling in love with that person. And I think the most interesting thing is to actually marry someone that's the opposite of your parent. And that it might not be maybe always the sexual component that a lot of people, and I know this sounds kind of odd, but this is all real true. I mean, people desire what they're accustomed to. Mm-hmm. But when they're not, you have to reteach yourself a lot of things. But when you do the opposite, I mean, not just the opposite just for the opposite sake, but I'm talking about actually seeing somebody for what you love and not because it's a transparency of your parent, mm-hmm. you learn a lot, and usually those relationships stay.
Well, and those are the ones that you're familiar with, that because that's been something you've been surrounded by at
and you're
some
attracted
point.
To it.
It's normal.
It's normal. It's in your DNA, if you will.
Now, I will say this. I mean, there are exceptions to the rule. My mother is the exception to the rule. She had a great childhood.
Good.
Her parents were married over 60 years.
Wow.
Okay. They had a loving relationship. Steady jobs, you know, and all the good stuff. And bless my mother's heart. I love her to death. She made a mess of every relationship because she looked for the wrong person.
Know?
She was always looking for the bad guy.
She was
the bad boy. Hot bad boy.
No, not the hot bad boy. She's
the ungood looking bad boy.
Was she looking for Ward Cleaver?
Yeah, I mean, you know, she's just an insecure person.
Oh, okay.
You know, and my mom tends to take the personality of the man that she's with.
I see.
That type of thing.
I see.
And it kind of like the country song. She just looks for love in all the wrong places.
And it makes you wonder if she maybe had a little too much parenting. You know, when parents are so good and they're overly, maybe she had been overly parenting.
Well, my grandmother worries about that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ask her? I've asked her. Well, we've talked to about that several times, and I go, Granny, you know, I mean, first of all, there's no instruction manual in raising kids.
No.
And at the same time, and this is something from my own experience too, from childhood divorce parents, you know, okay, fine, you were raised a certain way, but when you become an adult, you have the ability to change. You know, change and to make yourself, you know, whatever you want to be. And you can overcome deficiencies if you, first of all, you have to
recognize
be aware of
them.
But if you recognize it, you can work to overcome it. I did. I mean, and kind of tying back to your point, Ashley, you know, even though my dad was missing, you know, for my teenage years, my dad and I have a great relationship nowadays. I mean, we're pretty close. And even though he lives half a country away, we talk every week, and I visit him. He visits me.
Good.
And because I simply made the when I was a teenager, I made the conscious decision that, okay, he's not a perfect guy, but I'm going to try to emulate the things that are good about him and not to do the things that, you know, that he did wrong.
That's awesome.
Well, and explore him on your own terms.
Yes.
As a young man and as an adult.
And I did.
Yeah. And that makes a difference because your information is different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was not lily white and innocent as far as, you know, contributing to his divorce.
Right.
So.
Right. Right. Well, there were two people married.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As we start dealing with the high school age, it is a lot about relationships. The body has already redefined itself as something else. And a lot of times in high school, they're not boys and girls. They're young men and women. And some of them are actually men and women. So there are a lot of other things to take into consideration. And a lot of times when we're dealing with relationships, you hear old things like opposites attract. If you basic on science, you know, that's a lot, you know, that's lust, that's chemical, that's, you know, let's propagate the
love with chemistry.
The hormones.
Yeah, that's hormones, you know, and that's like Leslie's saying, let's sustain the human race. And that's not exactly, love and lust are two different things, but in a young mind, it's like, how do we deal with those things? I heard a very interesting take on opposites attract, and it's, yes, opposites do attract, and then they attack.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so true.
And they're not getting good information and good skill sets. I hate to keep saying that, but they're not getting a lot of information from sources that I think would be grounded in goodness. A lot of their information, probably too much of their information, is coming from social media.
Well, heck, I mean, I know 40, 50 year old adults who can't distinguish,
Absolutely.
So why would we expect, why would we expect a 14 year old to do that?
That's a growing divorce. I mean, the people who've been married 25, 30 years are saying, you know what? Done.
If they made it that long.
The kids are out of college. The house is empty. Let's make it completely empty.
Oh, I had that happen. My parents got divorced my freshman year of college.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I think their agreement was, once she gets out of high school, you know, we'll end this relationship. And, you know, for better, for worse, what have you. But yeah, that's a lot of people are doing that. And I think, let's talk about that real quick. So I think that when parents try to stay together to raise the kids, you know, the kids know that you're staying together to raise the kids. So, I mean, like, you might as well be happy.
Not
life,
even
you know?
Subconsciously. They know it consciously.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the kids could solve the problem a heck of a lot more than the actual courts.
You know, my parents were married 11 years, and it was 10 too many. Okay, I mean,
knew that,
and I'm not even kidding. And okay, thank goodness they stayed together long enough to, you know, make me.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's very important for me to say, when they told me they were getting divorced, I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was devastated because I was very much daddy's boy, you know, and of course he's in the service and he went off to Korea, then he went off to Italy and he got remarried and had another family and stuff like that. But as I got older, I realized that, those were just two people who just were not meant to be together.
I think that's very important to think about. And I think let's go back to the whole concept of your dad. Like, when my parents got divorced, and so my dad and I had a problem for years after that, and we didn't speak for a long time. And when he came back into my life, you know, we went through all the pains and the growing pains and what have you. But the greatest thing is that I basically explained to my dad that I won't be jumping through any more hoops anymore. You know, as a kid, it was always like, I want to impress my dad. I want my dad to be happy. I want dad to see this. I want dad to be like, oh, Ashley's so smart. Oh, Ashley did this. And I finally realized, I said, you know what? It doesn't matter anymore. I don't have to make you happy anymore. And all of a sudden, our relationship changed a lot, like you and your dad, Bill, because you finally got to the point where it wasn't dad anymore. Yes, it's a person that's in your life, but you had to sit there like, my dad is a child and I love him to death, but he's a child. And the way he sees life is great. I mean, he's like a youngster that sees life new all the time, and he's crazy. He just does whatever he wants to do. But But at the same time, I embrace that of him and I embraced who he is, but I wasn't trying to make him dad. I wasn't trying to make him, he's my dad. I have to impress him. I don't have to impress anybody. As long as I impress myself every day, that's what matters.
Right. He's done raising you.
Yeah. And you know what? You have to see the love. You have to see the things that they do bring to the table, because most of our parents, everybody listening tonight, you understand that one parent or both parents, they didn't know anything they were doing, and they were kids too. And so they made a lot of mistakes as well. And a lot of times, you know, like Deborah was saying earlier, unfortunately, a lot of parents don't say, hey, I don't know. They try to sugarcoat it. They try to cover it up. They try to be the know-it-all. But in the end, it just looks bad. And sometimes it's better just to say, I don't know. But you have to get past that and say, hey, I love my parents no matter what. Let's let it go. I'm not going to make them my parents anymore. They're not above me. We're on an equal level now.
Right.
How did you handle your mom during that same time? You said you were trying to impress your dad. I'm curious to see what was your thought process about your mother.
You know, my mom was always pretty steady, and my mom was going through a process of her own where she was going through getting her master's and getting her doctorate, and she was going through a process of trying to impress herself. Uh-huh. And so she was going through this process of trying to impress herself, and I think at that point in time, I kind of looked toward my dad to try to impress him. And so, you know, I think daughters do look up to their fathers to some degree. And my mom, I don't know, it's funny, I never looked to her for the impression fact. And so now I do. So now I'll be like, hey, how did you like the show? What's going on? But at the same point in time, I respect her and she respects me. And we're at that level of understanding. But we'll talk more about that.
Probably because she was the constant.
She was the constant. Mm-hmm. And my dad was great. But, you know, my dad's a child. God bless him. So stay tuned. We'll be talking more about parenting. We'll be talking more about growing up. And we'll be more exploring the different levels of learning. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. Well, we'll be back in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess on 660 The Answer.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning, what we learn throughout our lifetime, and how our learning actually tends to move full circle. You know, we have really gone through the ages. We've talked about pre-talk, before you know how to talk. We talked about 2 to 5. We've gone into kindergarten. We talked about elementary school, middle school. High school is where we are right now. And I think, you know, before you turn 18, this is a big time. And I remember in middle school, I always felt a little, you know, what was the word you said? A little different. You know, it just didn't really fit
just,
in.
Just, awkward. Yeah.
Awkward. It's a hard word for me to remember. Awkward.
It doesn't really fit you.
It doesn't really fit.
No,
yeah, see?
It doesn't.
And I remember my hair, you know, and what have you. And I remember in high school, though, I was a tomboy, a lot like you, Nedra. I mean, I remember I played a fast pitch, you know, softball. I played on a league. And then eventually I realized, okay, there is no real professional softball for women, so I think I'm going to have to move on. And then everybody else on the league tournament, like the third year, yeah, one is different from the other. So I kind of bowed out. I was like 4'9" and skinny thin, and I looked at everybody else, and they looked like they were about to try out for the Olympics. So, but it was good. And so now when you're in high school, let's say, you know, let's look at like 16. Let's talk about, you know, you're getting your license if you have cool parents that allow you to get your license.
Right.
My parents made me wait. And I went to Sears driving school.
Oh, though. No.
Did you go to Sears driving school?
No, I had took driving ed at the building. So I was lucky. We had driver's ed at school.
At your school?
Mm-hmm.
My mother made me take driver's ed whether I wanted to or not.
Yeah.
When I was 14, actually a year early. When
you
I was
had to go early.
I got a hardship license.
Oh, see,
you were the
I
lucky
wanted
one.
I wanted one.
No. I was not lucky because I became the errand boy.
You had to drive.
Go get groceries. Go take your brother here. Mm-hmm. Go do this. Mom, get your, you know, blankety blank. You know, I mean,
blankety blank.
You know, so you lost some of your growing up time.
Yeah. I mean, I had some responsibilities. So I would say I was unlucky.
Yeah, you were helping.
If you would have been me, you would have been looking at you going, he was lucky, because you could have also gone and done your own errands and done stuff.
Yeah,
too.
You could have driven. I had a parent who was everywhere. She picked me up from school. She mm-hmm. took me to school. Any after school programs, all of the above. Everyone knew, Nedra, your mom is sitting out there.
But,
Mrs. James is in the car.
She was, yeah. And she was.
Well, now here's a question for you, Ashley. Okay, we're talking about the high school years, okay? Mm-hmm. And is this a gender thing? You know, I mean, all of a sudden when, do we put responsibility on boys that we don't on girls?
I think it depends on the child, and I think it depends on the family.
I remember we were talking about driving, and I don't remember driver's education when I was in high school. They may or may not have had it. I don't know. But I remember going out on a date, and it was one of those things where certain things were expected if you didn't know how to drive. And my mother and I always had an open, we were always very, very open. And I told her, and she says, okay, you're going to learn to drive. So all I remember is that I learned to drive. My mother taught me how to drive. My father taught me how to drink so that I would not be taken advantage of.
Mm.
Good.
Okay. He taught you how to drink?
Well,
wow!
Taught you how to drink without getting drunk and losing control and stuff. Because
so you knew what the taste was.
Absolutely.
Here's
and
one of
what
those.
To look for and what not to do.
Oh wow!
And man, that was amazing.
That was before open container. Before they start telling us,
but my parents never would teach. I mean, they would never even teach that. I mean, that's amazing. No. That's something that maybe is very interesting. If I, when I have kids, that is one thing I am going to do is I'm going to expose my kids to things and explain to things in an open forum.
Well,
remember,
so Ashley,
hide it.
I was talking earlier about the forbidden fruit. Okay, here's the thing about the teenage years. I think this is where you go from pushing the boundaries to full out rebellion.
Right.
And the forbidden fruit,
must be tasted.
Yeah. The other side of the fence. I mean, it's like, I can't, drink. Well, guess what? I'm going to go out with my friends. Well, and what are you going to do? You're going to lock your kid in the basement?
Oh, no. And it's the period of invincibility as well.
I'm going to argue with that, though, because I waited. I did not rebel at all in high school. I rebelled in college.
But you chose to.
You chose that.
That was your personality, right?
Well, no. I mean, my curfew was at 9:00.
You met it.
And I made it 9:00. And because I knew that I was going to get in a lot of trouble. But that made me, though, when I went to college, when I didn't have to go report in at home and be there at 9, that made me rebel.
Me too. I was not a rebellious teenager. I rebelled, when I get into college too. But I think that, I think it is safe to say that, generally speaking, okay.
Kids do rebel in high school.
Yeah. Not everyone.
Yeah.
But a lot of them. And here's another area where they do it. Sex.
Oh, right. Yeah.
If you don't.
He brought it up.
Yeah.
Because
he did it.
Especially in our society, we still are, in kind of Puritan mode, I think. Sex is bad.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's how we teach our kids, don't do it. So, what do some kids do? Maybe not all of them, but some of them.
They head out.
This is when they start experimenting. I can remember even when I was in high school, starting in middle school, junior high.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
My goodness.
No, not me. Not me. I'm talking about friends.
Others.
Yeah, I started
others.
Hearing stories.
You know what? In some cultures, that's a rite of passage.
Yes.
You don't have to experiment or wonder what it's going to be like or if it's going to be whatever it is you think it's going to be, because there is a process set up so that you transition from not knowing to knowing. Now you can fill in the gap.
And Deborah, I would say it's a rite of passage in our society too. It's just that it's different.
It's difficult. It's
the rite of passage
it's
is
cloistered.
You're supposed to wait till you're married.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which, okay, I'm a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's doable.
Mm-hmm.
That really is doable. We seem to think that it's not, that something's going to happen. That's why I keep talking about the difference between lust and love.
I want to throw something out real quick. Think about this. And this was brought up to my attention by somebody, and I won't name names or point fingers or name names. But they said, wouldn't that be interesting if you didn't have sex before marriage? And if you got married, wouldn't you be more likely to not cheat?
Oh,
because, I've heard that too.
Because you're not thinking about what this isn't.
Yes.
It's the forbidden
fruit syndrome. But my theory, there's two theories out. One could be that, or one could say, then there would come a time in a midlife where they'd say, look what all I've missed out on. But I do think that sex in high school, I think you want to talk to your kids. I think that you need to know. Like in this case, Deborah, my parents didn't tell me about drinking or anything like that. And I think you want to talk to your kids about drinking and drugs and weed and that kind of stuff that parents need to know. And I think if you're open with your kids and you have an open, you know, conversation, you're going to find out a lot more than if you just say, don't you dare come home with this. Don't you do that. Because if you got this open relationship, you're going to be less likely to have kids that rebel.
And the more you say don't, the more they're heading
towards it. Because then you have to find out what
why
it
not?
Is.
Why
it's,
not?
It's you're not supposed to do that. Exactly. Yeah, and that's
it's,
the research.
It's the old Puritan mindset. You
absolutely.
Know? I mean, you know, we're out of sight, out of mind. See, neither one of my parents had to talk with me.
Right.
I,
at all.
I found out in the locker room.
The sex talk? No sex talk?
Yeah, the sex talk. You know, I found out in the park, in the locker
everywhere
room.
Everywhere.
And that could be misinformation, miseducation.
Oh, right. Lord.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was kids your same age or younger.
And they don't know too much more than you
but,
do.
But, you know, here's the thing, Ashley, you know, to tie it back into your point. I mean, I know 40, 50-year-old supposedly grown-up people who can't tell the difference between lust and love.
Right.
Why would we expect a 15, 16, 17-year-old to?
Exactly.
Well, because our definition of love and how we define it. And also, we don't have people to ask. There's nobody to ask and say, what does this mean? And it's hard to put into words. And the sad thing is there's no communication most of the time. I mean, if you could go to people and ask, I feel this way about this person, this connection, and nobody would sit there and say and judge you for what you're doing.
Right.
If there was no judgment call on it, like you said, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. If you said not no, but you said, let's have open discussion, it's not that forbidden fruit anymore. It's like, you know, I'm not really that interested in
it takes
now.
That tangibility and puts it on another level.
You know, something that I did with my younger sister, she's 10 years younger than I am, and she's my father and my stepmother's oldest, okay? But I maintain a close relationship with her. When she was 16, she came to me, you know, to say, you know, I mean, so does it really hurt, you know, if you have sex for the first time? So here's what I did. I mean, I kind of, you know, I explained what you know, little I knew, but I bought her a box of condoms.
Good for you.
And I didn't tell her mother this. She would have kicked my, you know what.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I said to her, look, it's better if you don't, but if you get in a situation where, you know, it's just, you just can't help it, protect yourself. You, young lady, don't expect him to protect you. You protect yourself.
How old were you at this time?
I was, I would say 26, 27.
So that made her 17.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have to address the hard questions and the uncomfortable questions.
Absolutely.
Good job, Bill, by the way. Good job being an older brother.
Absolutely.
Yay.
So join us back. We'll be going to break real quick, and we're going to be talking about how the learning actually moves full circle. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. And we'll be back in two shakes.
I can lift you up. I can show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be.
Get in here. Give us your perspective. We're listening. And you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, we've had a great show for you tonight. We've been exploring the different levels and dimensions of learning and what we've learned throughout our lifetime and how our learning actually tends to move full circle. And that's where we are right now. Let's talk about the full circle. We've talked about the different ages. We talked about everything from pre-talk to kindergarten to pre-K to middle school, high school. We basically got into the 18-year-old. So let's talk about full circle. Why would it move full circle? And I think this is interesting because young children are very attuned to nature. They're very attuned to animals and the people around them. And I think that's interesting because they're at a certain positive and real vibrational level on Earth and in the universe. And I think that a lot of times, the older we get, the more we get divided from that unity, from that feeling. And I think y'all understand there's like some sort of connectivity with the Earth. There's some sort of connectivity with every living and breathing thing, because honestly, everything is connected. Connected with the one. And I think that when we're young, that's where we are. But it's not until, you know, either our, for some people, their 30s, but I would say the average is about 40, 50, when somebody gets to the fact and says, you know what? One, I don't know everything. I want to know more. And I want to know where I am in this universe and what's going on. And at that point in time, that's where the full circle comes in, because you need to relearn the stuff that you knew before you could talk.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you? I mean, don't you agree? You want to relearn the stuff you knew.
You revisit it.
You revisit it.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're pushing right at the door of wisdom. As the old folks used to say, you haven't lived long enough. But by the time you're in that zone, you've had some life, you've had some experiences, you have some perspectives about things that have happened. And then you begin to speak on that perspective.
You know, one of my grandmother's favorite sayings, old head on young shoulders.
Hello.
She wishes she could take her head and put it on, you know, my shoulders.
Right. On the top of Fool's Hill. Okay. Yeah. That's somewhere between those 20s and those 30s, because you're out there. You think you know it. You've left home, maybe. I'm a woman.
Yeah.
I'm grown. You can't tell me anything.
That's right. I'm on my own. Mm-hmm. You know?
What's that part, you know, with JFK? I call that the grassy knoll. You don't know anything. You know what I mean?
You know some,
but you don't know much. And I always like when you hear somebody tell you, I know everything about that. And mm-hmm. you go, okay, well, you just defined yourself.
Right.
But let's talk about that spiritual nature connection. I mean, when we were young, you have that connection. And now, in the last 3 years, I've really developed that connection again, where I look at every squirrel, bird. I mean, and I've always had an affection for animals and for the planet and stuff. But that connectivity that's inherent every second, it's like the whole flower of life concept, where everything is together. Everything's one. The whole pattern goes together.
Well, it's the rhythm. It's the breath and the rhythm of life. It's all connected in layers for a reason. And if you stop and you listen, you can hear it. You can take that pulse. You can take that heartbeat. And you can move through your rhythm of your life.
Well, I'll rephrase that from a Christian, you know, standpoint. Because like I said, I'm a Christian.
Absolutely.
I'm practicing Christian. You know, it's part of God's plan.
Oh.
You know, and if you listen to the Holy Spirit, you know,
always
in your heart, then, you know, you can understand, you know, that, you know, God's plan for you. Mm-hmm. I think you and I are saying the same thing.
Oh, we are.
I think we are. And when we forget his divine design, as we so do in so many of our activities throughout the day, when you don't stop to reconnect with the earth, most of us forget that food actually comes from earth. And that's the solid nurturing ground mm-hmm. for all human existence. So at some point, we need to go back to that. In our high-tech world, et cetera, there still needs to be a point where we are grounded with the earth.
Absolutely.
Mother Earth.
Mother Earth.
Well, the church I go to, you know, we believe that, you know, nature is God's miracle. It's part of his
Absolutely.
Plan. And you're getting
Absolutely.
In touch with God by, you know,
Absolutely.
Taking
nature
care of
his work.
Yeah.
Nature is his
so
work,
true.
And we're a part of that
yeah,
work.
What an artist.
And then the water. Yeah. And then the water. There is water. You don't have survival long without water. We all arrive through water mm-hmm. and through that heartbeat of our mothers and that pulse. And once we start to walk on this earth, we have to listen for that other heartbeat that is the rhythm of life.
That's right. So true. I mean, like, it's funny. I always joke around about this, but it's true. I swerve for birds. You know, I swerve for birds.
I do, too.
Yeah.
And squirrels.
You're that person on the highway. You're that person.
If that bird is on the highway, hey, we got to
And I might be the one behind
us. Right. Just in case that wing
we'll
is
be swerving. Everybody's swerving.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I'll go out there and try to save a bird, too. You know, but it's all connected. And it's interesting when you think a certain way and you start realizing it. I mean, it's like today on the way, you know, to day before I was getting here to the studio, before it was like dark, I was on the highway and there I was driving and I saw like, you know, an 18-wheeler and I saw it and I thought about the driver and I was thinking about his long trips and probably how long he'd been up and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of waved, but I realized there was no way he could see me because of my car. Well, then later on, he comes by me and literally slows down on the left and he literally waves out the window, looks right at
me. Oh, really?
So he did see
me. So
he did see me.
Or he felt the energy where I was sending some good vibration.
To him.
Absolutely.
We do that across the board. Like as children, we were too young to express what it was because we couldn't talk. I mean, you have that innate ability to see the way that the earth is moving and the way what's going on and in the rhythm of things. And I think we got away from that so much because of the structure you talked about, Bill.
Yeah.
That structure, but also that conforming, because you never really wanted to talk about the things that you knew that maybe other people didn't know. You know, like things maybe you saw
sharing.
That other people didn't see.
Sharing.
Right.
Yes,
you know, and the understanding of things that nobody ever talks about, you
right.
know, and I think those are the things that unfortunately people, especially children, try to get rid of, you know, because, oh, this isn't normal. I don't think this is normal.
But
I need to get away.
It's all a part of that master plan, as Deborah said. And I think in connecting with the earth, if we look back to the Native Indians and any peoples who connect and think, and look and revere the greatness of nature. If we look and study those peoples, we can understand what we kind of miss now because of industrialization.
Because of civilization.
Exactly. You know,
we think we're above all that.
What about the tsunami? Yeah. Think about the tsunami. Now, if they would have watched the animals and realized
the animals ran first up
to the mountains.
To the highest place they could go.
As high as they could. If they would have taken a look and realized there is no animals around.
They didn't know. How many stories in both the Old and New Testament where God is speaking through nature?
Absolutely.
Nature's funny sometimes too.
God's handyman.
And nature's funny when you see all these birds like literally in an arrow, you know, pointing to
flying.
The right. And you go, well, I wonder if I should go left or right. Well,
you better go where the birds are going.
It's all black birds going one direction.
Go, something's up.
I think I'm going to go this way.
You better go that way.
I'm always amazed at that. I'm not for sure if it's the migrating pattern when a bird is down. And how they will fly in a certain pattern, waiting for that other one to
you know,
fill
and
in.
I took a comparative religions class a while back, which I found was one of the most interesting experiences I ever had. The ancient Romans, you know, they had what they called augury, which means that they could tell the will of the gods by the type of birds,
right.
What direction they were flying,
and the time they were flying.
And that was the basis of their religion, which, by the way, Christianity kept the forms of the Roman state religion.
They kept those forms.
You know, so it's cool kind of how all that interacts.
I want to do another show on this, so we're going to have to do some other shows on this because I think we need to go more in depth, and I think a lot of people listening tonight, at least I have, is there were images and thoughts and emotion that came to me as I'm doing this show. I remember just like when we were talking about latchkey kids and that kind of thing, and going home and waiting for my mom, and I remember I'd always open, there's a little room that my dog would be in, and I would take my dog out and feed my dog, and my dog snuggles, and I just remember that feeling of being able to, and so I think a lot of people listening tonight have gone down memory lane, as well as this can help you as you're raising your kids, or as your kids are raising their kids. This will be up on iTunes. And also, I can't wait to have Nedra and Deborah back in studio.
Me neither.
Oh,
this has been such a fun show.
We want to come back.
This has been a great show.
I like it.
Thank you.
I like
it. That's a good group of
And I like thinking about things that I haven't thought about in a while.
Yes.
And it's just refreshing.
Ashley will make you say.
She cannot say no to Ashley. I
love that. I love that. Yes. And so I think we've had a great show, and I know we've had an awesome show, and everybody listening has gotten something out of this. So we will be doing some more shows on this concept. We'll be talking more about the full circle. We'll be talking more about the learning trends that we go through, because we're all going through it. And if you think about it, time is all happening at once. So stay tuned, because guess what? Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in 3 shakes.